Oh, baby. I love that music, getting me all pumped up to talk some football. Let's get into it. We are here. We're on Between the Tackles. I'm your host, Hogan, with my co-host, Burge, with my other co-host, Manish. My dudes, football season is almost at an end. Can we freaking believe that at this point? Burge, doesn't it seem like the season just started yesterday? What the hell's going on? We're at conference championship weekend already. What happened to the time?
I'm ready for it to end. I'm going to be that guy. This has been one of the worst years of football enjoyment for me as a football fan for as long as I can remember, with the way the Patriots are. And now my picks from last week, we'll get into that. Nice little goose egg right there for me. Just an absolutely miserable experience watching those football games. And of course, now I got to root for my most hated team. And we'll get into that later. But other than that, I'm doing fantastic. Manish, how you doing, man?
I'm doing great. We're like, a month or so away from spring football? Is it the UFL or the XFL? What league is it that plays in the offseason?
Something like that at this point.
I can't wait. My guy, Anthony Becht, is, I think he's one of the coaches for one of the better teams, the St. Louis Battlehawks, who have been pretty good. But I know this is not this is an NFL podcast, so – to answer your question, yeah, look, it always goes by really fast. It's only 2 weeks left. But, you know, there's three games. Hopefully all three of them are really excited, and I anticipate that this weekend for sure we're going to have some nail biters.
That's right. We will certainly see who is going to punch their ticket to the Super Bowl after this weekend. But before we get to any Super Bowl talk, any of that kind of stuff, we got some local news to go through for our loyal listeners out there that know us well and love us dearly. You know, we're Patriot fans, talking about myself and Burge. Manish, you don't count. You're a Philly fan. Obviously, you're excited about that. We're not talking about you right now. We're talking about the good team that we like. Well, maybe not good anymore, but we hope is going to return to the good status. And we got some news to talk about now that Vrabel has officially been announced and everything like that. And obviously the big question mark for New England was, who are his coordinators going to be? Who is the coaching staff that he's going to be bringing on board with him going into this fresh new season here? And instead of being a new face, we got a returner to the offensive coordinator position, that being Josh McDaniels for his third stint with the team. Now, for yours truly, I was never the biggest Josh McDaniels guy. I always thought that Brady made him look better than he was. And, you know, he had been around the Patriots forever, blah, blah, blah. That being said, every time he's with the team, they win Super Bowls. So I need to just, you know, shove a sock in my mouth and just shut up and deal with it, because obviously the guy knows how to coach the offensive side of the football. Burgess, I'm going to throw this one to you first, obviously being the other Pats fan here. How do you feel about Josh McDaniels' return to the team? And do you see his coaching and, I guess, play calling being beneficial to Drake May going forward with what we saw on the field last year with Drake May's rookie season?
So I'm like you. I was never the biggest Josh McDaniels guy. Back in, I think it was 2021, I couldn't wait for him to get hired as a head coach and move on. I was so done with the screens on third and 12 and, you know, the certain play calls that would just drive me bonkers. I've changed my tune a little bit, because since Josh McDaniels has left, we've had our share of offensive debacles. That's probably putting it nicely. I can't help but like the move. The guy knows how to do quarterbacks. Look what he did with Mac Jones in 2021 as a rookie. I know I'm going to say this. He was a Pro Bowler. Yes, he was an alternate, but he really did some good things with Mac Jones. He had a really strong rookie season. And, you know, he's not costing the team anything. I know that's what a lot of the Patriots fans hate. I don't get a lot of the hate that's coming from the Twitter sphere and everything like that. I don't get it. He's a known commodity here. Yes, he did fantastic when he had Tom Brady. He failed miserably as a head coach. And at the end of the day, the guy can call an offense. Mike Vrabel can be like, Josh, run the show on the offensive side, and it's going to get taken care of. I am very excited to see him work with Drake May, who was far more talented than Mac Jones, we can obviously all three of us unanimously agree on that. And, you know, it's something that I think we're going to see some continuity with the hire too. Josh McDaniels is not a flat risk after 1 week, after 1 year. He's not going to get a head coaching offer after one season with Drake May. He's had his shots as a head coach in this league and has failed miserably at both. So he's going to be here for at least the foreseeable future. So we'll see. We'll see where it goes. I'm very intrigued by it. And it's probably the best I've felt about an offensive coordinator since Tom Brady left.
Ooh, strong words there. Fascinating fact about Josh McDaniels coming back. He actually was recorded a little bit earlier for like a Patriots thing today about him coming back to the team. Little tidbit he threw in there was he was the guy that went and picked up Mike Vrabel when they signed him initially to New England after his stint in Pittsburgh, which just is one of those things where it's such a head case thing for me where it's like, you went and picked the guy up at the airport. Now you're working for him when he was a player under your tutelage. And it's just like, it's flashbacks to the whole like Ryan Day and Chip Kelly thing with all that stuff, which I find fascinating because, oh, what's up?
I just got one point I want to make real quick here. And you bring up the Vrabel McDaniels connection. I'm right. Sick and tired of hearing that this was a Kraft hire because he's cheap. The Raiders are still paying him and that Kraft made the decision for the offensive coordinator. These fans all over. And again, Manish, I know your opinion on the Twitter sphere. I read too much of it. I see what these people are saying who clearly know nothing about what they're talking about. Mike Vrabel doesn't take this job if he's not allowed to pick his offensive coordinator. That's what it comes down to. He doesn't take this job. He could have had any job that was open. He's been allowed to pick his staff. I'm sick and tired of hearing people, oh, it's a Kraft hire. Oh, this stinks. It's just another retread. But I'm tired of it. Like, let's be happy about this. Sorry, I had to get that off my chest.
Well, no, that's actually a great segue because I remember two distinctive clowns that were clowning on me in our text group about, oh, when I brought up the fact that McDaniels got hired and I was like, oh, gee, I wonder who the DC is going to be. And it's like, oh, Hogan's never happy. Rah, 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 rah. Like, yeah, okay. Well, I want my team to be freaking good again where you clowns are sitting there just like, oh, we won the Super Bowl. We got Josh McDaniels back. I don't give a shit. I need good people in charge, and we did not have good people in charge last year. So I expect good things from my team. My team has won 8 games in a 2-year span. That is horse crap, if you ask me. So that is a great segue because I am one of those angry people. I'm not all over Twitter, but I am one of those angry people because I want to see results. So Manish, wonderful segue that it was going into my question here with is I believe it's Terrell Williams, if I'm not mistaken with the name there, that was hired. Former defensive line coach for the Detroit Lions. Looking at his pedigree, he's been with Vrabel before in Tennessee. Yeah. Do you see continued success with the defensive coordinator position in New England where he's got that tutelage underneath Mike Vrabel, where obviously Vrabel has a lot of respect for him? Obviously, the reports were out there that he was actually promoted to the assistant head coach, I think, in the final year there in Tennessee. And his resume speaks volumes with the players that he's worked with and what he's done with the defensive lines that he's been with. Do you see him having success as a defensive coordinator at this point?
Well, he's going to be a first-time defense coordinator. Those assistant head coach titles typically are solely based on salary. If you can't find another position for a head coach, usually it's assistant head coach / position coach, in his case, a defensive line coach. So that's more about getting more money, but clearly he's a guy who Mike Vrabel trusts. All the years they spent together in Tennessee as his defensive line coach, that first year in 2018, Tennessee had one of the best defenses in the league. Obviously, as a team, they had a lot of success when they were both on the same staff. So the trust is there. I'm curious, you know, as a play caller, you know, we focus so much on offensive play calling and can this guy be a good offensive play caller? Well, there's defensive play callers too, and he was the run game coordinator in Detroit, along with the position coaches of defensive line, but he's never called plays before. So that is something that I think is important to note. That doesn't mean he can't do it. I don't think calling plays defensively is any easier, I should say, than calling offensive plays. It's just, it's sexier to talk about offensive schemes and how to attack defenses. Well, defenses, if you're smart about it, can do the same thing and flip the script and attack offenses. You know, you're seeing it in Philadelphia. I don't want to go on a tangent, but Vic Fangio, an excellent defensive coordinator, play caller. And you can see how the Eagles have, you know, reaped the rewards of having that kind of experience. So, you know, will there be a learning curve for Williams? I think there'll be somewhat of a learning curve. Now he's an experienced coach, but again, play calling, making adjustments on the fly in game is something that really can't be taught. I mean, that's something you've got to learn on the job. So that's just something to consider. I think it was a good hire because Mike Vrabel is going to bring in people he trusts. And real quick on the other side of the ball, I agree with you, Burge. Mike Vrabel did come to New England, and he wasn't going to go anywhere else if they were going to, the ownership or other people in the building were going to pick and choose who was going to be on his staff. This is a 100% Mike Vrabel production. He's picking everybody he wants. He obviously feels good about Josh McDaniels. I'm on board with what you said, Burge. An experienced guy is really the opposite of Williams in some respects. He's a guy who's shown that he can be really successful just as a coordinator. Didn't work out in two spots as a head coach. Frankly, I mean, I was trying to rack my brain earlier. He's been a head coach for two different organizations and had been fired in the middle of the second season for each of those teams, Denver and Vegas. I can't remember another coach who's had that on his resume. But I do think he'd be really good for Drake May. He's seen everything pretty much. He's worked with the best of all time at the position. I think Drake May can learn a lot from him. I think that that hire made a lot of sense for Mike Vrabel. Seemed like a no-brainer, but, you know, coaches make decisions where you're like, well, why didn't they go in this other direction, which seemed like the obvious good move. And I do think, in Mike Vrabel's case, he made the obvious good move for Josh McDaniels and Drake May, and he felt comfortable with the guy that he's going to be his defense coordinator.
Right. I mean, the big thing that we can rely on, obviously, with Vrabel having the defensive background as both a defensive player and defensive coordinator for so long is, I guess, if Williams struggles at all, Vrabel is a guy he can lean on to help him in that asset of the game, where McDaniels, having the head coach experience and running the offense for almost 20 freaking years at this point with the Patriots. I mean, obviously not the full 20 years, but he's got the experience. He's not going to have to really sit back and really monitor McDaniels and everything like that. Where if you looked at, you know, the organization last year with Mayo, where it was just a disaster from the top down between Covington having no idea what he was doing, Alex Van Pelt, the argument could be made that he was okay, especially when they transitioned to Drake May. So speaking of transitions, that was a hell of a one. I'm patting myself on the back. I am just killing it today with that stuff. Oh, shut up, basement dweller. I don't want to hear it. We're positive grooves over here today. All right, because your boy is in first place with his picks. We're going to get to that soon enough. But no, talking about Alex Van Pelt, that was an interesting tidbit that we talked about previously, where I think everybody kind of knew he probably wasn't going to be coming back as the offensive coordinator for the Patriots. But the argument could be made that he did a really decent job when the team transitioned from Jacoby Brissett to Drake May early on last season. Do you think, and Burgess, this is specifically for you, do you think the team is making a mistake by letting Van Pelt go completely? Do you think there would be any kind of beneficiary, you know, part of him being a quarterback's coach or a kind of a consultant in any capacity? Or is it just cut the ties, let McDaniels do his thing, and let's start fresh?
The only thing that I can think of is that there was some sort of disagreement with behind the scenes that we're obviously not privy to for that to happen. I think, you know, Van Pelt's not going to leave and go get another an offensive coordinator position right out of the gate here. Like, I don't believe that that's going to happen. I think it would have been fantastic if they could have worked something out where he could have stayed as a quarterback coach, because you can see the results on the field in terms of Drake May's play, his footwork, even looking at Joe Milton in the final game of the regular season with what the performance that he put on, like, the coaching was there from the quarterback's position. And that's ultimately what Alex Van Pelt's background is. He was a former NFL quarterback, and then he was a quarterback's coach. He was an offensive coordinator up in Cleveland, but Kevin Stefanski was calling the plays. So for me, it would have been great to see him stick around, but at the end of the day, he didn't. And one of the interesting tidbits I saw that came out, I don't have the exact number in front of me, but he was paid among like the top of like the offensive coordinator likes in the league for the title of offensive coordinator. And I think he was short like $3 or $4 million is what he got paid as an offensive coordinator. And that was a significant amount for across the board, which goes to show you that nobody wanted to come to New England last year to coach under Gerard Mayo. which is just another tidbit that comes up. So for me, I would have loved to have seen it. Am I surprised that he's gone? No. But at the end of the day, I'm much happier having Josh McDaniels at the helm and, you know, calling the plays and even being the coaching Drake May as a quarterback.
Right. Right. Well, let's move on from the porous New England team that we have currently and what we hope will be a turnaround season going into next year. We'll have all off season at this point to talk about it.
Can't wait. But
we're going to go into some more coaching news. And Manish, my dude, I'm throwing this one to you, obviously, because we're going right into the New York Jets, where they have officially announced that Aaron Glenn is the new head coach of the New York Jets. How are we feeling about that?
Well, you know, there's two schools of thought. One is, you know, the Jets have not had success with first-time head coaches with defensive backgrounds, or a modicum of success, other than Rex Ryan, which was, you know, almost 15 years ago. You know, Todd Bowles did not make the playoffs, even though he had a successful first season. Obviously, Robert Saleh was not successful, even dating back before Rex. You had Eric Mangini, you had Herman Edwards. The only head coach in the last, I think, 15, 20 years, maybe 20 years, who was offensive-minded was probably the worst of them all, Adam Gase, and he only lasted a couple years. So there is a school of thought that the Jets should have gotten an experienced head coach. You can look at it two ways. If the glass is half full, you're saying it's an experienced head coach. If the glass is half empty in your eyes, you're saying it's a retread head coach. You know, Aaron Glenn, and I know this for a fact, he wanted this job back when Robert Saleh got it, you know, four years ago or whatever it was. He's a former player, as Patriot fans are well aware, you know, three-time Pro Bowler, probably their best cornerback in the last, you know, 30 years other than Darrelle Revis. Obviously, Sauce Gardner started off well, but Aaron Glenn played for the Jets for 8 years, played for Bill Parcells, played – I'm sorry, coach for Bill Parcells. You know, this guy has a great resume. Should they have hired an offensive coordinator to be their head coach? I mean, that's up for debate. I am a little biased, full disclosure. You know, I've known Aaron Glenn for about 15 years. And, you know, I've seen him kind of rise from the ranks of a personnel scout, which is a very low-level position. In the front office, he started his post-playing career in the NFL doing that. He'd been a GM in some small league in Texas, but he kind of, you know, went from the ground up. You know, there was a time when he didn't know if he was going to be pursuing a front office career or a coaching career. And, you know, I think that he has done things the right way. There's no doubt in my mind that he can command the locker room. First and foremost, he's a former player and a very good player, Pro Bowl player. He wanted the job because he has special ties to the Jets. You know, some could say, well, you know, it's a dysfunctional organization. A lot of questions about ownership, but these aren't surprises for Aaron Glenn. And I think part of the appeal for the Jets hierarchy was that he did actually want the job. And again, he's wanted this job for many years. The question that I would have is, what's his staff going to look like? It seems like Steve Wilks will be his defensive coordinator, former head coach, experienced guy. I think that makes a lot of sense. His offensive coordinator is TBD. It might be the offensive coordinator in the Rams organization. Not exactly sure who he's going to settle on. But in terms of leadership skills, commanding a room, really motivating each guy differently, based on, you know, that guy's personality, experience, I don't think that's going to be a part of the problem. Aaron Glenn can connect with a lot of different people. I've seen it, you know, up close and personal. That's not going to be the issue. The issue for me is, who's going to be the quarterback for Aaron Glenn in 2025? Is it going to be Aaron Rodgers? If it is, in all likelihood, it's not going to be Aaron Rodgers moving forward. And Aaron Glenn signed a five-year contract. So the Jets have to figure out their quarterback situation after they figure out who their general manager is going to be, because they don't have a general manager yet. Aaron Glenn's going to have a role in choosing the general manager, which is, you know, a little bit unorthodox. It can work, but it's not typical. The Jets just have a lot of different questions. But in terms of whether this particular candidate is qualified, I have no doubt that he's qualified. the biggest hurdles and challenges for Aaron Glenn are going to be, first and foremost, will ownership get out of the way and let him and the general manager, you know, run the team? And when I say ownership, I mean ownership and ownership's kids. And then secondly, can they find the answer at quarterback, the long-term answer? Because obviously a 40-something-year-old Aaron Rodgers is not the answer for the long-term. But just in terms, in a vacuum, hiring a guy who's got head coaching skills, and a guy who's grinded his way through the ranks, Aaron Glenn, to me, was an excellent choice when you look at it through that prism.
True. I guess the big thing that I wanted to know is if his Madden rating is going to be good enough for the Jets to retain him for all 5 years there. So, again, yeah, I got to bring the joke.
That's a real concern. I know, you know, we joke about it, but Brick Johnson, one of Woody Johnson's two sons, is, I think he's 17 now. So he's only going to get older. And I think he's obviously in his father's ear. That, to me, is a potential problem. It would be a potential problem for any general manager or head coach coming in. It's incumbent upon Woody Johnson to really get out of the way. He kind of got out of the way for the most part prior to last season. I know people don't think that's actually true, but he did get involved in a couple of decisions where players were cut for financial reasons. I know that coaches in the past were not happy about that, but by and large, he has stayed out of the way. If you look at the Jets, you know, history with general managers and head coaches, not every time, but most of the time, he gives head coaches a pretty large leash. Now, Adam Gase was hired by his brother. That was a complete disaster. But Woody Johnson has given coaches 3, 4, 5 years. It's not as if they're constantly turning around head coaches every other year. So if Woody could just show some restraint, tell his son, yeah, great idea, but we're going to let the guys who are getting paid millions of dollars make the important decisions, then maybe the Jets have an opportunity to, you know, flip the script here a little bit.
Right. And I guess my one of my big things that I'm curious about, and we'll go into the next coach that I'm going to talk about here, is I'm surprised that we haven't gotten to a point in the NFL where owners are finally stopped giving coaches, especially new coaches. And then this isn't a knock on Aaron Glenn at all or anything like that, but it's more or less like, I'm surprised that owners still go out of their way to dump so much money in the laps of new coaches for an extended amount of time, when they haven't either proven themselves yet or given them a chance to show, like, hey, you're due an extension or whatever. I'm surprised, where especially you see with player deals where you get 1 or 2 year deals and you see coaches get these 5 year. I think, what was it? John Gruden got that insane deal from Davis where it was like 10 years, partial ownership, blah, blah, blah. Like, and it was a year and a half in, he was fired for being racist and all that stuff. So, I mean, it's I'm baffled that owners haven't woken up, and instead of just wasting money on guys, they kind of take a step back and go, hey, you know what? Let me give you a 1 or 2 year deal. Prove yourself. Make sure I'm actually making a proper investment here. And then if it works out, you'll get paid a buttload for the future. You know what I mean? I'm curious if we're going to ever see that at some point in either pro sports or in the NFL or anything like that. But let me use that as a segue to go to the next coach that I want to talk about. And Burgess, I'm going to throw this one to you, because obviously this is a guy you were very high on. And of course, I'm talking about Ben Johnson, former offensive coordinator for the Detroit Lions, who was officially announced as the head coach of the Chicago Bears recently. First off, how do you feel about his fit going to Chicago? I mean, that's got to be interesting, going to a division rival of all things there, where it's just like, that's got to be like, you know, a stab in the back to Detroit fans there. But at the same time, he's walking into a potentially wonderful situation that we've all talked about on here a million times, with the plethora of talent that Chicago has across the board there. Do you see Ben Johnson succeeding in his new role, or is this just going to be another Matt Nagy, you know, Eberflus, whatever situation, where it's give him a couple of years and then they're going to move on to the next hire?
I think he's an outstanding offensive coordinator and play caller. I think what we've seen in Detroit has displayed that with their turnaround and, you know, how they've done over the course of a couple of seasons in the regular season. Didn't exactly have the playoff success. We'll get to that in a little bit, but you know, you're right. He's walking into an outstanding situation. He's got, you know, Caleb Williams, a first overall pick from the last draft. You got a bunch of other guys on that offensive side of the ball, a lot of young elite level potential talent there. And my only question is, you know, we talk about the Jets and their questionable ownership. The Bears have their own situation with their ownership there. So it's going to be interesting to see how that dynamic works out. And I think what it's ultimately going to come down to for Ben Johnson is, how is he going to command the room? You know, he's never been the head coach. He's been the offensive coordinator. This was one of my few apprehensions about him coming to New England, and why at the end of the day I was happy with the Vrabel signing is, if I'm building my staff out as an owner, and this is obviously the Madden guy in me talking here, I want a culture established before anything else. Like, for me, culture is more important than the fancy, shiny offensive coordinator coming into his own, you know, as a head coach. You have to be able to command the room and establish that. Obviously, we saw Gerard Mayo in New England flop masterfully at establishing that type of culture, the leadership, and all that. So that to me is the biggest question for Ben Johnson in Chicago. Once he didn't get the Patriots job, the Bears became, you know, right at the top of that list for him in terms of destination where he was going to end up. So it will certainly be very interesting to see where the Bears go, a team that has been just, I don't want to say underachieving because they haven't been good, but I think a lot of people expected them to be better than what they were this year, given the level of talent, the shiny new quarterback and all that. I do find it interesting that Ben Johnson was not interested in going to Washington last year and chose to go back to Detroit, where he could have been playing with, you know, Jaden Daniels this year, basically the second pick in last year's draft, who, again, we'll get to him in a little bit. So for me, it's like, did Ben Johnson hurt his stock this year with Detroit? No. Obviously, he was, outside of Vrabel, the top candidate coveted by all of these teams. But I can't help but armchair quarterback that a little bit, being like, did he make the right decision there or not? Time will obviously tell.
True. I mean that the biggest thing that I can tell both of you guys and our listeners out there is that you will never, ever see more hook and ladders in Chicago than you will going into next season, because that is the Ben Johnson special if I've ever seen one. So really quickly, guys, before we wrap up the news here, I just want to touch on a couple more tidbits that I've not become official yet. But as of right now, it looks like the Jacksonville Jaguars are leaning towards Liam Cohen to potentially be their new head coach. Obviously, that is in lieu of the fact that Jacksonville finally pulled the trigger and fired their GM, which we discussed at length on here before. That is not official as of this recording, so don't take my word for it. It's just, it sounds like that's what's happening. And then the other one that I just wanted to throw in there really quickly is Brian Schottenheimer is being heavily considered by the Dallas Cowboys, where he has been the offensive coordinator, I believe, for the last few seasons. So fascinating stuff to talk about in the future if it potentially rolls down that way. But what we're going to do right now is we're going to hear from our lovely sponsors, and they're going to tell you all about stuff that I don't know anything about. So hold on to your butts. We'll be right back. All right. Welcome back to Between the Tackles. Again, I am your host, Hogan, Captain Positivity over here, because your boy is rolling in the winds. That's how it's rocking around here at this point. But before we get to the good stuff, like I said, we got to talk some other things, like the previous games that happened this weekend. Where, gentlemen, remind me, how did you guys do picking this past weekend? I don't think any of us did particularly well, but I know yours truly is still the champ of the picks right now. But do we want to talk about Burgess? You look like you're absolutely enthralled to start discussing the football games this past weekend. Do you want to get into it? You look a little excited.
Take it away. No comment. No comment. I'm hurting over here.
Manish, that sounds like a zero win talker to me, if you're going to ask. But let's get into the first game that kicked off, unfortunately, that we don't really want to talk about, being Patriot fans and Chief despisers. But we got to talk about it anyway. The Chiefs, yet again, won another GD playoff game. Very, very questionable calls that, you know, I'm saying, you know, I kicked that off during the year where I said they're good enough that they don't need the calls. And even you got Texan players. So I don't know the legitimacy of this or not. I gotta actually look into it, but I saw a clip earlier, and you guys can correct me if you know about this. Joe Mixon on Twitter retweeted something by TJ Houshmandzadeh about the refs favoring the Chiefs. And Joe Mixon supposedly got fined by the NFL for like retweeting it or liking it or something. And then he put out a tweet that said that it's Bush League and that he compared something to Connor McDavid getting a cross-checking in the NHL or something, and then he got fined again. I don't know if there was any legitimacy to that. I hope there was, because it's hilarious if it's true. I mean, it could be AI. I don't know. I get fooled by, you know, the mailman every other day anyway. So I'm going off on a tangent here. Manish, are the Chiefs going to win the Super Bowl again? Talk me out of it. What the hell?
No, the Chiefs are not going to win the Super Bowl. The Chiefs are not going to get out of this weekend, which we can talk about in a little bit, even though I may or may not be picking them for strategic reasons. But, no, look, they beat the Texans. They were supposed to beat the Texans. I think the Texans shocking the Chargers the week before, or at least shocking them in my eyes, was probably enough for them. It was a good season for them, given how I think they underachieved during the regular season. They were kind of the one of the it teams entering the season. They didn't play like it for most of the season. And, you know, the fact that they won a playoff game, got to the divisional round and lost to the two-time defending champions is no, you know, nothing to sneeze at. But the Chiefs are a better team. You know, what's disappointing is that DeMeco Ryan's a great defensive mind. You know that in big moments, and when I say big moments, I mean playoff games, Patrick Mahomes is going to lean on Travis Kelce. And Travis Kelce, despite having, you know, probably his worst season, which is to be expected because he's on the, you know, the down slope of his career. He's in the twilight of his career. You cannot let Travis Kelce destroy you, and that's what happened. 7 catches, 117 yards, a touchdown. They had no answer for Travis Kelce. It almost looked as if it was vintage Travis Kelce, even though he looks like he's a turtle in the open field. He doesn't really run that fast anymore. But the idea that he carved him up to that degree at this stage of his career, no excuse. You got to take away Kelce. And then let the other guys, Xavier Worsley, Hollywood Brown, who actually didn't have a catch in the game, you know, the Noah Grays of the world. You got to let those guys, even DeAndre Hopkins, got to let those guys beat you. You cannot walk away from Arrowhead Stadium or whatever they call that stadium now with a loss, knowing that Travis Kelce, the guy who has been killing teams for the last decade and has been the centerpiece of that offense during their championship run, beat you at this age. Just inexcusable. It really is inexcusable. I'd be shocked if Sean McDermott and the Bills I'd be shocked if they don't make sure that Travis Kelce does not eat him up like he did last week. It's really confounding to me because, again, I got a lot of respect for DeMeco Ryans, but the idea of an old Travis Kelce just beating you time and time again, it was painful to watch. I just could not believe that they didn't do something schematically to take him away from the game.
Well, you look back to how the Patriots did it back in the day when Tyreek Hill and Travis Kelce were in the prime of their careers. You take one of them completely out of the game, and I believe I don't even remember which one it was, but they would always scheme to bracket one of those players and say we're gonna make them use this guy to beat me. And clearly the Texans didn't do that. I'm going to touch about the refs. I have to do it. I have to actually go off of it. I cannot stand the flopping that goes on in the NFL. Like, are we headed towards like an embellishment penalty in the NFL? Because that tackle on Mahomes out of bounds where he was like shoved, and you can clearly tell that he flailed his arm out to intentionally draw the flag. Like, you do something like that, it's so unlikable. And, you know, I use that as an example. They threw the flag on that. And then in the game we're going to talk about, you know, the other AFC game that we're going to talk about in a little bit, Lamar Jackson gets tackled 5 yards out of bounds and there's no flag. So, like, there's no consistency when it comes to how they issue these calls. I get it. The good players, the star players, the good teams, they're going to benefit off the calls more often than not. The Patriots, it happened to them over the course of their dynasty, although I've talked to a lot of non-Patriots fans who say that the Chiefs are far more unlikable than the Patriots were because the Patriots are actually good, where this Chiefs team barely scraped by most of the games that they won this year. But I can't fathom that the way that these calls, you know, Clay Martin was the referee in this game. What's the Chiefs record and Patrick Mahomes' record when Clay Martin is the ref?
Undefeated,
7-0. Like, give me a break.
Hold on, guys. I mean, they are the two-time defending champions. So the fact that they're 7-0 when this one particular ref is reffing their games, it could be just a coincidence. Maybe Andy Reid and Patrick Mahomes and Travis Kelce, Tyreek Hill, maybe they're just good players. So.
Oh, I agree with that. I agree with that. But when you factor in the fact that this has been going on all season, It's not just the one ref. It's all.
Yeah, no, look, I think, sorry to interrupt. I think that Patrick Mahomes did say this week that he probably should not have, you know, flopped. I don't think he used the term flopped. I think generally he said that he doesn't think that the Chiefs get the benefit of the calls as much as people think. I think there's actually some merit to that. I do think they get calls, kind of like the Jordan rules, if you follow basketball in the 90s. But I do give Patrick Mahomes a little bit of credit to admit that he probably shouldn't have, you know, reacted the way that he did on that out-of-bounds play. They're unlikable because they keep winning. And I know you guys are Patriot fans, so you look at it through a different prism. But the Patriots dynasty, they were unlikable unless you were Patriot fans. There's not many people outside the Patriots universe who liked Belichick and Brady. I mean, that's reality. When you win too much, people want to see new teams. And I think that's clearly where we're at with the Chiefs. I got a lot of respect for those guys. I do not want to see them win. I want anyone but the Chiefs to win this year.
ABC, anybody but Chiefs. And can I just say that while the two of you are bickering, I feel like Emperor Palpatine with like Darth Vader versus Luke Skywalker, where Burgess is Darth Vader trying to pull you to the dark side, Manish, where you're just not taking the bait. You're I'll never join you. I love the Chiefs. I'm not doing it.
You can't say that the Patriots weren't as unlikable as the Chiefs. It's not true. They're both equally unlikable.
I phrased it wrong.
Okay.
What I was going to say is, what I should have said is the calls that are going the Chiefs' way, it was never that bad. It was never this bad.
It never felt that egregious when the Patriots were winning. And I think, again, this is what my take on this is really quickly before we go to the next game. I just, when you look at the calls that the Chiefs get in the moments they're getting them, that's where it looks as egregious as it's getting. Did the Patriots get calls? Did Brady scream at the refs? And did they make rules specifically for Brady? There's a reason why you can't tackle quarterbacks below the knees now. It was because Tom Brady tore his ACL in 2008. Yes. Everybody knows that. That being said, the Patriots did not win Super Bowls off of a holding call at the end of the game. They did not. You know, their dynasty was launched by one of the most controversial calls in the Tuck rule. But at the same time, it was called to what the rule was. Now, the Chiefs are certainly taking advantage of a caveat I will give you, Manish, when referring to Mahomes there. I think Mahomes is taking advantage of the rules where he's getting the calls that he's getting because the refs have to throw the flag. It's the way the rules are written right now. Those rules have to be addressed. And Manish, you and I went off on that at one time about the fake sliding and all that crap. Yeah, so
the slide was a big one because that happened in this game where Mahomes was dancing around as a runner past the line of scrimmage. And at the last second, he saw two guys coming and he decided to go into the slide. The two Texans collide with each other and they throw a 15-yard penalty. Like, give me a break. Like, that's why.
Yeah, I have one question for you guys. Even though technically it was a penalty, should the refs actually called throw a flag on Dee Ford? Because that was an AFC Championship game and that helped the Patriots win another Super Bowl. Was he offsides? Perhaps. Would you call that in that moment?
If he was offsides,
yes. Let me finish.
That's kind of ridiculous.
That's a crappy way to go and win an AFC Championship game.
Yeah.
I will be the first one to say that.
Right.
At the end of the day, they did call it right. They did call it was offsides. But yes, in that moment.
Let me
use a quick example from hockey. When it's overtime, especially in the playoffs, the whistles go away. They put them away. Yeah. They let the players play. They let them go. I would love to see the NFL take that type of mentality in the fourth quarter in the playoffs where they for example, was it the Chiefs Eagles Super Bowl where Bradberry had that little ticky-tack hold at the end of a game? They should let that fly all day. That's a regular season penalty.
That's my point, is kind of like the whole argument with the Dee Ford thing was the Patriots still had to score in order to take advantage at that point. That was going into overtime, right? Like, there was still a chance for the Chiefs to respond.
When the game been over, it was an interception. Brady threw an interception.
The interception was, but I'm saying like it's still – that didn't conclude the game is my point. And that's where you see
– Are you sure about that?
It didn't conclude the game.
If he had picked it off, it would have ended the game because it would have ended 2 minutes.
But my argument is the Patriots
they still had
the
score.
The Chiefs still had to do something. Like the game did not conclude because of the offside penalty, where you saw in the Super Bowl against your Eagles. So you should be agreeing with me. God damn it, Manish, I'm going to get you on this one, where you like Burgess brought up the fact that Bradbury held, was it Juju, yeah, right? That
essentially, you know, that clinched the game. I actually think that was a good call. I think after the game, Bradbury even said I held him. But Bradbury said I held him. Like, I mean, I was like, you don't hold the guy. You know, we're going on a complete tangent here. I have a bigger issue with the quarterback fumbling the ball without being touched and the defender running in for a touchdown. But again, that's maybe we'll talk about that if there's a rematch in the Super Bowl this year between Kansas City and Philadelphia.
Oh, God, I hope not. Let's move on to our next game before we all blow gaskets and veins pop out of our heads here, please. Burgess, send us into the Lions Commanders game at this point. Good Lord, I don't want to talk about the goddamn Chiefs anymore.
This was an outstanding game for me. This was one that I was watching on my phone while I was trying to play Madden to beat up on a bunch of teams, as I said in the group chat with you guys. But, you know, Washington Commanders end up beating the number one seed Detroit Lions 45-31 on an offensive shootout, which I didn't think was going to bode well for your boy Aaron Glenn there, but apparently he still got, you know, still worked out for him there. I was devastated. I am a Lions fan as my second team. I've been on record with that. Was my dream Super Bowl was the Lions and the Bills, and it just didn't happen. Jaden Daniels looked outstanding in this game. Manish, are we seeing like the ascension of Jaden Daniels to an elite level quarterback, or is that baby putting the cart before the horse?
Well, he's had an elite season for sure. I think you got to see how this plays out over time, because at this point last year, I think a lot of people were given those same types of accolades to CJ Stroud. Mm-hmm. Stroud took a step back this season, but I think he clearly has the tools to be an elite player. Where he ranks, who cares? You know, he's had one season. It's been an exceptional season. Let's see if he can build on it this weekend, and if he can become the first rookie quarterback to go to the Super Bowl. So he's had an incredible season. He's just gotten better as the season has gone on, as you would expect. Things are a little bit tougher making that transition in the first month or so of the season. But, yeah, he was great. I don't want to take anything away from him. I don't want to make excuses for Aaron Glenn. That defense was held together by scotch tape, but that defense also shut down the Vikings 2 weeks earlier. So it's not an excuse to say they were missing a lot of players, because they were missing a lot of players in that Week 18 win against Minnesota, where they dominated an explosive offense. So to me, Jaden Daniels, what's really impressive to me, all the other skills, the processing, the dual threat, you know, he loves to throw the ball first and foremost. I think he runs it more like a Josh Allen runs it versus a guy who looks to run first. I think he really takes the same cues as Josh Allen, where the guy can throw the ball. He's a great passer. If he needs to run, he will. What's fascinating to me is that he has not turned the ball over in each of the first two playoff games of his career. That says a lot about any quarterback in high-pressure situations, let alone a rookie. I think from the Lions' perspective, really quick, this was really Detroit's worst nightmare. Jared Goff reverting to those ugly games that Jared Goff has from time to time. Mm-hmm. It was just an awful moment for him to play as poorly as he did. Ben Johnson, I thought, didn't call a great game. But ultimately, when your quarterback throws three interceptions, really two, the last one, who cares? They're kind of in gotta-have-it mode. But the fumble, the two interceptions, red zone turnovers, just a miserable time for Goff and the Lions to really implode. I'm with you, Burge. I thought they were a Super Bowl team. They were my preseason Super Bowl favorite. 2 years in a row, just an unbelievably loaded team that didn't get to the Super Bowl. And maybe, I don't know, I'm not going to say that their door is closed, because they've lost both of their coordinators. The Eagles proved this year you could have two new coordinators and still go far into the playoffs and perhaps even win the Super Bowl. So I'm not saying that their door is closed, but what I am saying is that they had two dynamite teams in 2024 and 2023, and neither of those teams made it to the Super Bowl.
I'll just say, I think that this one is going to hurt Detroit more than last year. They made the NFC Championship last year, and obviously they blew it in the NFC Championship game. But this one, all year, just rolling. They really didn't show anything. Obviously, the injuries add up. that's going to be something that's going to obviously sting when you think about, well, the what ifs of the situation there. But yeah, Jared Goff turning into that. I mean, the hook and ladder with the Jameson Williams. He should have never thrown that ball. If he was going to throw that ball, he should have chucked that thing a mile into the stands. I don't know what he was thinking there. I'm not putting that one on Ben Johnson.
I blame Ben Johnson on that. I don't know how you feel, but like Jameson Williams, he shouldn't have thrown it. At that point in the game, it's a little too cute. You're getting a little too cute if you're the offensive coordinator calling that.
I think it was a very cute play, but at the end of the day, like I would assume, and this is just me, if Ben Johnson's as, you know, heralded as, you know, we've all heard over the last 2 years in terms of coaching, you got to think that he told Jameson Williams when they ran that play and put that play and installed it, if it's not there, just throw it over the receiver's head. Like, I got to put a bunch of the onus on Jameson Williams, but I agree with your sentiment that, like, I think it was a one-score game at that point? Like, yeah, way too cute at that stage of the game to do that. Hogan, are the Lions cooked? Are they going to be in trouble? I mean, we shit on it a little bit. Like, are the Lions, where do they go from here?
I was going to say, that's a great question. Obviously, the big thing is if you lose your coordinators, I mean, we know as Patriot fans more than anybody that when you lose coordinators, it's not a simple overnight fix where you can just pick up the pieces with somebody brand new and expect to win multiple playoffs or championships again, all over again, time and time and time again. The biggest thing is obviously they retain Dan Campbell, who is obviously the workhorse of that coaching staff, who's done amazing things. I'm on record as saying I think he should be coach of the year. There's no doubt in my mind he deserves it after what that team went through historically and on top of that this year. So will they continue to be as dominant as they've been this year and you know, a little bit last year? The questions could be out right now based off of what their draft looks like and based off of who they retain and what they're able to bring in for coaches going forward. I'm not really sure, but I mean, we'll see at this point. But I wouldn't count out Detroit. The only thing that would give me pause to count them out is how the rest of the division bounces back next year, especially with Green Bay, how Minnesota's going to look, and then arguably what Chicago's going to look like with Ben Johnson there. I mean, we all argued that it was the most ridiculous division in football. And then ironically, they all went 0-3 in the playoffs, which is just Oh, I mean, what the hell do we know at this point, right? So the Lions could be in trouble. They might not be. One team that might be in trouble, and we're going to go freaking segues. Woo! I'm on fire. We're going right into it, is the St. Louis Rams again. I can't get it out of my head. The LA Rams. And their future could be a little murky after their latest loss to the Eagles, which we won't harp on because, you know, Manish doesn't want to sit here and gloat all night. So we're not going to talk about it until the sun comes up. We're just going to talk about the Rams specifically. Manish, are the Rams in trouble going forward based off of the future of Matthew Stafford? He is no spring chicken. And on top of that, too, Sean McVay has talked about retirement in the past as well. So are the Rams on the verge of not being a contender anymore?
Well, I think it all hinges on Matt Stafford. What I thought was interesting is that his wife this week came out, said that late in the season, maybe some point in December, in a game, Matt Stafford broke maybe 3 or 4 ribs. So he's playing with cracked ribs, which is astounding given how well he played, I think, down the stretch. For a guy who's 36, he's going to be 37 in another week or two. Would he contemplate retirement? It's certainly possible. Now, I think he's got some good football left in him? I absolutely do. But I think when you get to that age and that position, the hits really accumulate and it takes a toll on you psychologically, especially if he, you know, I'm assuming he actually did crack his ribs, like his wife said. That gives you a little pause for concern. If he's not back, then clearly they're in rebuilding mode. If he is back and you would assume he's healthy before the season starts, I think they're certainly a contender. Now, they have a very small window because it's predicated on how long Matthew Stafford plays. They don't have a viable guy in the waiting in the wings, and then they're going to be no different than, you know, 75% of the league, which is looking for a legit franchise quarterback. I just thought, you know, Matthew Stafford, you know, had a key turnover the other night against Philadelphia, and we don't want to, you know, belabor the point, but he showed a lot of guts. They didn't win the game. That last drive, he and Puka Nacua hooked up for what I thought was going to be the defining moment in that game. A deep ball, incredible catch by Puka with a little over a minute to go down to the Eagles 13, and then the Eagles defense took over and sealed the victory for them. But to me, Matthew Stafford's got, he's certainly got one season of high level football left in him if he wants to play. I don't think you have to worry about Sean McVay. You know, he was contemplating retirement a couple years back because he felt a little burnt out. I think he got rejuvenated. The fact that this team made the playoffs, went on a run after they got healthy this season, is only going to further, I think, his desire to get back to the Super Bowl. So I think you're going to have a motivated head coach in McVay. It's just a matter of whether Stafford wants to play. Because if he does play, they will be a contender next year. They've got a lot of pieces in place. They really beefed up their defensive line with Braden Fisk and Jared Verse, two incredible rookies, two just home run picks in the first couple rounds. Those guys are going to be difference makers for a long time. So I think that they are well positioned to make another playoff run so long as Matthew Stafford wants to come back.
Well, clearly my dog Maverick doesn't want to agree with you. For all those who heard the barking there, I apologize for that. He's still barking. He clearly thinks your opinion is horseshit, Manny. So I apologize on his behalf there. But like you said, it's going to be fascinating to see. One thing that's going to be really interesting to see is if they do end up moving on from Stafford, obviously with the retention of Puka Nacua and Cooper Kupp there, those are some great players to throw to. And as we all saw with Minnesota, who has amazing players to throw to with Justin Jefferson and Jordan Addison there, maybe they'll get a guy like Sam Darnold in there to just surprise everybody and just shock the world. Your boy there. But let's go ahead and move on to the final game from this past weekend. And I know Burgess is just itching to talk about the results of this one. His Buffalo Bills, the team he's rooting for this weekend, pulled off technically the upset over the Baltimore Ravens. Burgess, how you feeling about this game? Let's discuss, shall we?
I'm disgusted. Disgusted probably is a light term. I think I had said in our group chat in my emotional state Sunday night that I was done with football. I'm done. I'm all done. Obviously, I didn't mean that. Obviously, the NFL's got me wrapped around its little finger. I mean, give me a break. You know, this game, it was thoroughly entertaining for me just watching it. I thought it was a really good game. And, you know, the one difference, Baltimore turned the ball over. Buffalo did not. That was the sole difference in this one. I think that, you know, the quote unquote playoff Lamar showed up. He clearly fights demons when he has to play Buffalo in the playoffs. And, you know, the interception he threw, which I didn't think was as costly because it was a deep throw, didn't result in points for Buffalo or anything like that. But the fumble where he tried to do a little bit too much, put the ball on the ground, resulted in, you know, ensuing drive for the Bills ended up being a touchdown. That was tough. You know, I still thought they were in it till the end. You know, I was watching it. It was great. It was entertaining. They tie the game late. Mark Andrews, my fantasy stud tight end. You're never going to be on my team again after that drop. I was like, you got to be kidding me. And then because I was listening to it on the radio at the time, I was driving home from work, and I got home and I look at the clip. I'm like, it was right in his hands. And we would have had that game deserved overtime. Like, that would have been a fantastic overtime to watch as a spectator, as a quote unquote neutral fan, even though I was not neutral, full disclosure. But as a neutral fan, that would have been a great way to cap off divisional weekend. We were robbed of it. You know, Mark Andrews had a fumble earlier in the game that was just absolutely brutal. Another one that turned into Buffalo points. Guy hadn't fumbled in 5 years, and he picked against the Buffalo Bills to do it. Me, as the selfish person in me, was like, why would you do that to me? End of the day, the Bills win. I'm disgusted. I said it all year. I said it before the season. In fact, I think we clipped it. I think we clipped it, Hogan, mm-hmm. that I would root for the Buffalo Bills in the playoffs against the Chiefs. And I'm doing it. I'm circling the wagons this week. I cannot put up with 2 weeks of three-peat talk. The best storyline for me anyways is the Buffalo Bills going to the Super Bowl and then losing, just crushing the Bills fans again, losing in the Super Bowl. For me, as the Bills hater, the resident Bills hater, I can't ask for much more than that. But at the end of the day, I got to do what I got to do. I got to do what I got to do. I got to protect my Patriots, and that's either choosing the back-to-back-to-back possibility or the division rival of which I hate possibility.
Well, it's Bills, right? It's Boy, I Love Losing Super Bowls. That's what Bills stands for. So you're all set in that department there. Yeah, that's right.
That's the first time I've heard that. That is the first time
I've never heard that before.
Really? I've said that so many times.
Never heard it
before. I think you guys are gaslighting me. I've definitely said that on here before. But anyway, Manish, really quickly before we move on to our picks for this week, I got to ask you, in terms of Baltimore, and Burr just touched on, you know, the playoff Lamar, but the big thing was last year, everybody talked about them in the AFC Championship not running the ball once in the second half of the game. Derrick Henry, arguably one of the greatest running backs in the last 10-plus years of the NFL at this point, had 16 carries in this game, 84 yards. He was averaging 5.3 yards a carry. And unless I'm mistaken, did they not really run him a whole bunch in the second half there? Or if they did, they went away from it again. Like, does Baltimore just crap their pants when they get in the playoffs? I don't understand the mentality there. They are a power smash mouth team, and yet they want to. I think for some reason Harbaugh wants them to prove that Lamar is a passing quarterback and can do it all. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, the running back had 22 carries, so 16 for Derrick Henry, 6 for Justice Hill. Justice Hill had 50 yards, so it's not like he didn't run well either. 22 carries does seem a little low for this team. In a tight game, I don't know if either team had more than a one-score lead. I don't think so. I think the most the Bills had at any point during the game was a one-score lead. So, you know, it was nip and tuck. You know, I don't necessarily subscribe to the notion that John Harbaugh wants anyone to think that Lamar's a passing quarterback. I think he just wants to win. And it's unfortunate for Lamar because ultimately he lost. So playoff Lamar becomes a thing again. But he did lead them on an 88-yard touchdown drive in under 2 minutes in crunch time. Now, you can make a case that they wouldn't have been in that position if he didn't have two earlier turnovers, and that's a fair case to make. But, you know, I'm going to invoke a guy. I don't even know if you guys have ever heard of him. A longtime tight end, played in the 60s and 70s, Jackie Smith. He played for the Cowboys. He's known for having the most memorable drop in Super Bowl history. In the 70s, Cowboys, Steelers, perfectly thrown pass by Roger Staubach. You know, I'm dating myself, but I'm bringing this up because when I saw Mark Andrews drop that two-point conversion, I immediately thought of Jackie Smith. And it's so unfortunate because he's such a good player, you know, perennial Pro Bowler, All-Pro player. And to have him have that type of game, Burge alluded to the fumble earlier, which was a massive turnover. And then to really kind of just trip over his feet, I think, as he was backpedaling in. Everyone had a hand in that loss. Certainly Lamar Jackson made his fair share of mistakes. But this was unlike the other playoff losses, I think, for Lamar, because he led them on it just what could have been a historic drive. If Andrews caught that ball, goes to overtime, maybe the Ravens win. I think a lot of people, you know, are to blame. Unfortunately, the top two guys – on that team, you know, two of the three best players were culpable. I think they should have ran. I went on a tangent, as I always do. But Hogan, I think they didn't run Derrick Henry enough. I don't think it's because they wanted to prove any kind of point. I don't know why Todd Monken got away from it, but he did. Did that cost him? I don't know. Maybe. I think there's like four or five different things that cost him. Ultimately, we're all going to remember the Mark Andrews drop. And that's unfortunate because it was such an entertaining game. Lamar did play clutch with 3 minutes to go. It was the type of drive that really kind of cements legacies if Baltimore went on to win that game. But that's not what happened. It wasn't meant to be. And it's now it's Josh Allen's turn to see if he can make it to his first Super Bowl.
Well, I just want to bring up the fact that you guys both say unfortunately. And I don't think it's unfortunate because I think there was one person on here who picked the Bills to win that game. So Burgess, let's talk picks, my man. How did we do last week?
Do I have to?
Yes, sir. Bring us home.
Well, you still sit in the lead there, Hogan. But we all overall didn't have that great of a weekend. Hogan and Manish both went 1-2-1. Your boy, 0-3-1. Yeah, that's why I said it was like I was done with football. I was just like, nothing went right for me. Absolutely nothing went right for me. But at the end of the day, our current records as we sit, Manish and I are still tied in the basement, 2-7-1, and Hogan unfortunately is at the top, 5-4-1. So it's not that impressive, but he is in the lead. I will winning give him record. His credit.
Suck it. His credit. Winning record.
Hey, we got 2 weeks of football left for Manish and I to make up our grounds here. So
that's right.
Hogan.
Well, hey, no. Basement dwellers. I already want me to go first.
I'll go first. All right. So we obviously have our two conference title games. We have the Commanders at the Eagles, the Bills at the Chiefs. I'm going Eagles -6 against the Commanders. I think that the Eagles have too much going for them right now. Saquon Barkley is an absolute beast. And as great as the story for Jaden Daniels has been, I you know, no rookie quarterback gone to a Super Bowl. I don't see this happening this year. I think what the Commanders has done has been a fantastic story. I'm ultimately would love to see it. It would make the Super Bowl exciting for me because the other three teams involved do absolutely nothing for me as a fan. Some degree of hatred for all three of them. Sorry, Manish. But
why do you hate the Eagles? They're the NFC.
It's the same reason I hate the Buffalo Bills. I have some friends that are fans that have turned me off on it. And I've talked about this before, but my buddy,
Manish. He's talking about
No. My buddy Koba. No, you met this guy Hogan. He's been on the pod, and we talk smack. He was laying into me when the Patriots and the Brady and the whole. I don't want to get into it. I don't want to go on another tangent. But at the end of the day, the Eagles -6 is my pick there, and unfortunately, Chiefs -2. I think the refs are going to be. I'm just kidding. I just think that. There are a lot of ghosts for Buffalo at Arrowhead. You know, you got the whole 13 seconds there. I didn't think they played particularly well against Baltimore offensively. You look at strictly at the numbers as well. I didn't think that they had their best game. That clearly was not an MVP level performance in the divisional round. I expect that it's going to be a little bit of tightness there for Buffalo again going into Arrowhead. And I just think that Andy Reid and the Chiefs just have their number and they're going to find their way to win. I don't think it'll be pretty, but I do think that the Chiefs will end up going back to the Super Bowl, therefore cementing the absolute worst matchup for me as an NFL fan because it's par for the course of 2024 for me. Manish, take it away. I'm done talking about it.
All right. Well, let me first say that it is really hard to be 2-7-1 in the playoffs in your predictions. The fact that I got 8 of the 10 playoff games to this point wrong, you know, with the spread is kind of ridiculous. And I would be making fun of myself over and over and over again. I mean, I guess I can make fun of you, Bird. You got the same
exactly.
The fact that we have a 20% winning percentage is really awful. It's embarrassing to not only myself, my family, future generations. But anyway. To the games. For betting purposes, I think the Eagles are going to win. I think they're going to win convincingly. However, from a strategic point of view, the fact that I am 3 games behind Hogan, I'm going to pick the Washington Commanders, take the 6 points. And full disclosure, I don't really believe anything I'm about to say from this point forward, but I'm going to make a case that the Commanders and +6 would be a good bet. Jaden Daniels, as I previously said, has not committed a turnover. Of course, the Eagles haven't committed a turnover either, but that doesn't help my case here. So I will say that the Eagles have been really bad in the playoffs in the red zone. They're 1-for-6. Didn't convert in the red zone last week, and I think they're 1-for-4 against the Packers. Jalen Hurts, dealing with a knee injury, even though he practiced fully, I can't imagine that his mobility won't be affected in some way. And if he does decide to run, the Commanders defensive coordinator, Joe Witt, has already said that those defenders are going to treat him like a running back. He's going to get hit like a running back. I think everybody here knows that Frankie Louvoud sometimes, goes right to the whistle, maybe goes, a little bit beyond the whistle. Just ask, the helmet to helmet. Ask Jared Goff after the helmet to helmet hit, which was not flagged because he's not Patrick Mahomes. That's all to say that even though the Eagles are a better team, I think that the Commanders are playing better right now. And if you're giving me almost a touchdown, and if you're desperate like I am and need to catch up to Hogan, you take the points. So I'm going to take the points, even though in reality, 27-13 Eagles. But anyway, moving on to the AFC game, Chiefs and Bills, same thing. I think the Bills are going to win. I think it's Josh Allen's time. In any other year, he'd be MVP. It looks like Lamar's going to be MVP. But I have to make a case for the Chiefs minus the two. The Chiefs are two-time defending champions. Very hard to beat them at home. Patrick Mahomes, even when he doesn't play well statistically, makes plays with his arm or his legs in critical times to get Kansas City over the hump. As we talked about earlier, Travis Kelce might be old, but you know he's got a little extra juice. I don't know if it's hanging out with Travis with Taylor Swift. I don't know what it is. He's still got life in his legs, his body. He can still make plays. I think he'll make plays in the AFC Championship game. And then perhaps the biggest reason, you know, there's a photo going around social media. I don't know if it's accurate. It may not be accurate, but I believe that the end zones in Kansas City have been painted with three letters, R-E-F-S. So they've got that on their side. Officiating, Mahomes, Andy Reid, you know, why wouldn't you take them? By the way, Bills 24, Chiefs 20. But I'm taking the Chiefs.
The hedge, the all-time hedge.
I need to come back in this contest, and the only way I can do that is to pick the two teams who I don't think will win. So I think I made a valid case for two teams who I don't actually think are going to win.
Now, wouldn't it be an absolute kick in the nuts if I were to change my answers right now?
Well, that's just not fair. That's just completely unfair. I mean, that'd be completely unfair. There's a code between gamblers. You know, you tell each other where you're going to pick, and you stick with it.
That's true. Well, in that case, everybody knows I'm going with the Eagles minus six, and I am going with the Bills plus two. Hopefully, we see some good matchups at this point. I got a quick trivia question for both of you guys before we sign off here. Jaden Daniels is the sixth rookie to play in conference championship game weekend history. Can you guys give me the names of the other quarterbacks that are the other rookies to have made it that far?
Well, one's very easy. I'll give you one. That's all. Then I'm out. I'll give you one. I witnessed it. Mark Sanchez.
There you go.
Ben Roethlisberger. There's one.
That's two.
Currently playing?
One is currently playing.
Brock Purdy?
That's three.
Oh, that's good.
I'll give you a hint for a fourth one. He's in the same division as Roethlisberger, or he was.
Carson Palmer?
Nope.
No.
He was. Going back to the 70s, 80s?
Nope, we're going back to the 2000s, late 2000s. He was a quarter. He was playing Flacco. This year. I'm sorry. Flacco. That's right. Yes, Flacco. He's another active player. So that's four. And then Jaden Daniels is five. If you guys can give me number six, I will give you $20. I don't think you're ever going to name this player.
Yeah, you got to give us a hint. I will get this. I need a hint, though.
I can't give you the hint because that's going to ruin it.
Well, nothing too obvious. Give me
NFC
hint.
South.
NFC South, the current NFC South?
Not current. No, not current at all. This was late 90s, early 2000s.
Is this team still in the NFC South?
Fuck you, Burgess. Yes! There's no way you just got that. I knew I was going to give you too much information, Manish, when you were asking for good.
That's unbelievable. Now, wait, the Burge, do you have Venmo? Because that's
going
to transfer the money.
We didn't shake on it. That's gamblers. That's between that whole thing.
Whoa, Sean King.
Right. That name blew me. So the NFL posted a picture, and it says that Jaden Daniels is going to be the sixth quarterback to play in conference championship history. And it showed the pictures of the other ones. And I'm sitting there looking. I'm like, yeah, Flacco. Yeah, Roethlisberger, Sanchez, Purdy. And then Sean King was like kind of off to the side. And I saw Tampa. And I'm like, that's not Dilfer. That's not Brad Johnson. I'm like, yeah. And that was it. That was Sean King. It was his rookie year. And then I just for shits and giggles, I looked him up on Wikipedia to see what he did after that. And the dude is just, yeah, that was unfortunate there. But gentlemen, as always, it has been an absolute pleasure shooting the shit, talking football, and having fun with you guys. So that's everything I got at this point, unless you guys got anything else you want to touch on.
Go Birds.
And that's going to put a wrap on it, because that was a horrid way to end this podcast where it was so much fun and Manish just shot it dead right there with that utterly awful statement. I'm just kidding. Go Birds, I guess. I took him in my pick, so I got to root for him now at this point. Although I'd love to see Washington pull the upset, but I'll root for the Eagles just for you, Manish. You know, I won't be like Burgess. I won't be petty about it. So, all right, ladies and gentlemen, as always, it's a pleasure. We will hopefully see you next week where we'll be discussing what the Super Bowl matchup is going to be. Burgess.
I'll be looking for that $20.
Peace. Yeah, you're going to be looking for a while. Later.